Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Mother's Talking. This evening, this is a special episode because we're celebrating and honoring, I guess, World Down Syndrome Day, which is on Thursday, the 21st of March. And it's the 21st because our children have an extra chromosome on the 21st pair. And that's why I think they chose the three as well. Because instead of a pair, they have three chromosomes. So it's 21-3. And I just thought it would be so lovely to share a story of a mother with a child with Down syndrome. And I'm delighted to have Susie here. So hi, Susie.
Hello.
And me and Susie, we are in. Well, Jude's got a speech and language class, and Susie and Ziggy, lovely Ziggy, are in it too. So we've probably been sort of sat in class together now. I don't know, maybe 18 months or something, is it about that?
Yeah, that's right. We're in our second year of sort of school years, as it were.
So they do this, don't they? Like for 3 years, I think,
Yeah.
until they start school. So it's a lovely thing that our local charity do, 21 and Co, who are amazing, and we also need to big them up. And I just wanted to chat because in class, we don't really get a chance to ever properly chat. It's just kind of class and tasks and a bit of chaos thrown in and lots of snacks.
Lots of snacks.
Lots of snacks, which drives Tati a bit nuts, I think. She puts up with
Very patient with them, but yeah,
it.
lots of snacks.
But yeah, I just thought it would just be lovely to hear your story with Ziggy. And I don't know if you've thought about where you want to start, but maybe just the tough bit, like I know for me was obviously the discovering. And I don't know when you discovered, but maybe you want to start there, how you found out and everything.
Yeah, sure. So we were what's called, in the technical term, a prenatal diagnosis. So we found out that Ziggy had that extra chromosome whilst we were pregnant. And this came off the back of this pregnancy actually came off the back of quite a long journey to conceive Ziggy. We'd had multiple miscarriages, and the last one being losing, sadly, our little baby Beau at 20 weeks. So this was almost our last spin of the wheel, for want of better words. And everything had gone well, and we went for our 12-week scan. The sonographer sort of was fussing around a bit, and it was sort of in the COVID-y times. So I remember being on my own, and I wasn't too worried about that. I'd been through a lot of scans by this point, so I felt pretty okay. But she was fussing around a bit, and I think I got a sense that something wasn't quite there. And so anyway, the nuchal measurement came back quite big. I don't know what the correct terminology is, but there's a certain measurement that is sort of, indicates typical growing child. And there are certain measurements which may be a marker for things like Down syndrome and other sort of conditions, genetic conditions. So we then, to sort of keep that story reasonably short, we then went through the process of NIP testing, which gives us a stronger likelihood. It's not a diagnostic test, but it gives you a really clear indication. And we came back basically as high chance as you could get of having a baby with Down syndrome.
Were you one in two? Is that the highest
Yeah, I'm
you
pretty sure. No, it might have been that it was sort of like less than five or something. And it
can
was a
get?
bit, when I spoke to them on the phone, I was a bit, what does this actually mean? It's basically you're saying it's like almost one in one. And she was like, yeah, pretty much. And I have to say, at this point, it was a really interesting one for us because, as you probably know, Jen, there are so many horrific stories from people we know of, diagnostic or conversations with medical professions at this point, where that first interaction can be a real marker for how it's going to go, like negative language, or it's a risk, or I'm sorry to tell you that your baby has Down syndrome or may have Down syndrome. And I just remember them being very good, actually, in that sense. We had a very positive experience in that sense of their language. And obviously, there was quite a somber note to it, but it was still quite positive. They had, I think they had, I found out later that they had worked quite closely with the charity Positive About Down Syndrome, and they had taken on board a lot of that advice around language and the importance of language when delivering this news, and that it's not necessarily negative. However, the other side to that is that actually such a large proportion of families do go on to decide to terminate or not be able to cope, that I think that's what they were expecting, I'll be honest, you know, because I think it's about what, 90, it's over 90% of families.
I think it's 91, isn't
that
it?
Room. Yeah, it's quite high. So, you know, at the end of the day, I understand that they were probably expecting that conversation not to go very well. So when I had that conversation, she phoned up to confirm to say that the NIP test had come back with this very high chance of having Down syndrome. I mean, I just remember sitting on the stairs, and I think I knew already, but I did burst into tears. I think you're just overwhelmed by what might happen, what might be, what does it mean, what does life look like for us. There was this added thing of we've been through so much with all of the losses, and it was very much sort of a, seriously, I'm not sure I can take any more. I just want something straightforward to happen, and, you know, for this pregnancy to be straightforward. And all of a sudden I knew it potentially wasn't going to be. So there was a whole mix of emotion and confusion about how I actually felt about it, which was quite interesting for me, because when we were pregnant with Bo, we actually had some markers of various things, and it hadn't bothered me. And we'd literally said, we don't care. We don't want to find out anymore. We didn't do additional testing. We were just felt blessed to, you know, be pregnant, to have got that far and to be on that journey. So, and it was really interesting that when it came to Ziggy, I don't know why, but we just needed to know. For sure. We had this very high chance. So we ended up having amniocentesis as well at the earliest stages. You can have them, I think, up to 24 weeks, but it the risks sort of go up very slightly. I mean,
where did you go for that? Did you go to George's?
No. So we're under West Middlesex. So we ended up at Chelsea and Westminster. And again, he was just wonderful, the guy who did it. And I went on my own, and that was actually out of choice. I just knew it was something I needed. And my husband, well, my partner, really wanted to come, and I think he was devastated. I said, look, I need to do this on my own. I don't need any. It's such a physically invasive procedure at the end of the day. And I don't know why to this day that I was comfortable doing it, because it is a risk. It can end up in miscarriage. I don't know why. I can't explain it, but
I'm with you. I think it's a 1% risk, isn't it?
It is.
It obviously is a risk, but I was the same. I needed the amnio.
Yeah, did you?
Yeah.
And I actually, when it came back, and I remember sitting in the waiting room for it, and I was on my own. I'm quite a sort of grounded person normally, and I'm quite rational, but it was testing everything about me, of course, because this is life, this is death, this is choice, this is, I felt like I was having to make a choice, and I was confused by that idea of society almost feeling that slight pressure from society almost to make a choice as to whether my child lived or not. It was quite a weird one, was actually, and that's, so we'll come on to that bit in a minute about what I realized around that. But I remember sitting in the waiting room, and it seems really sentimental, and you know me, Jen, I'm a very emotional person, and there was this sign on the wall, and it said something like love conquers all, or love is the start and love is where it ends. And I remember just thinking to myself, you know, what am I doing? You know, what does this mean to me? And what is the most important thing about even trying to have children is that before the last sort of 50 years, people didn't know. People never knew what was going to happen, whether their child had a disability, whether they didn't. And obviously as medicine has progressed and transformed, there's this slightly unnerving and scary, obviously beneficial in some senses, ability to be able to see the future a bit, or maybe think you see the future. And that's where society has gone wrong, is it's taken to you a place where you're sort of almost seeing a future that may not be, that may not happen. And the reality is very different. And sadly, obviously, society presents a very negative future sometimes based on sort of presumption. So the results came back, and it was a confirmed diagnosis. And there was this, basically from the initial 12 weeks to about 18, 19 weeks, we had about 6 weeks of turmoil. I was in touch with the Down Syndrome Association. I was asking all of these questions, you know, what percentage of children do this? What percentage, learn to talk? What percentage are X, Y, and Z? I'm a real statistician in that sense. So I was like, and there was this point where we were going round and round in circles. And I think my other half was much more, it didn't really matter to him at all. I think he was in a much more comfortable place with it. Obviously worried, obviously concerned about the what ifs, but I don't think there was any other choice for him.
Yeah.
And then there was this point where I remember just waking up one morning and going, there isn't actually a choice here for us. Why do I feel like I have to make a choice? Surely the presumption should be that we've chosen to have a baby and this is our baby. And then some people obviously do go on to make it a choice, but actually for us it wasn't. It was I couldn't imagine. I said to Darren, could you actually imagine us walking into hospital and doing anything, you know? And he said no, particularly after the experience of Beau, where we'd had to give birth to a child that didn't live. It was quite a difficult one for us to imagine going and actively making that choice. And that is negative on anyone who makes that choice. That's their right. But for us, that I suddenly thought, I can't do that.
I can't believe how similar our stories are. I mean, there's an episode earlier on called Down to Birth, where I talk about my story with Jude, and we're like exactly the same. Everything you've said, when you found out, how you found out, having the NIPT, having the amnio, that weird 12, my ours was like 12 to 20 weeks when we were just and we had, you know, some heart scans, and it wasn't until I just watched his heart for 40 minutes in this 20 week heart scan, and I was like, well, of course we're doing this. It was like, you know, you have your moment, don't you? And it's funny because it's completely removed from logic, isn't it? You go round and round trying to figure it out with, like you say, stats, research, logic, but it's your heart that makes that decision. Like, and it's, you just have that moment with yourself, don't you? And it just goes, yep.
Yeah.
Like, that and it, exactly, and you're right, it's not really a choice either, is it? And it was weird to be, like you said, it was weird to be handed that as a choice. You know, that.
Yeah, I have to say the care I got was exemplary. You know, I mean, I say going back to the horror story thing, and that was the only thing, if I was going to say to them, look, tweak this, it was sort of this little uncomfortable silence of, and let us know. I don't think they ever quite said, let us know what you want to do. But it's not like if you were going for a typical child for your scans, anyone would say, oh, let us know what you want to do about this, by the way. The presumption is you're going ahead. And that's the only difference, I'd say, is it was sort of, but then I understand that they were probably expecting that to be the outcome because of the fact that they haven't, out of 100 women, 94 of them are going down that route. And that there was this palpable sense of relief, I have to say, when I phoned them back, you know, and I sort of said, and by this point I got to know them. It was the same team that had been there for Beau, and they were just brilliant. I know them by name, and I still pop in to see them actually with Ziggy sometimes. And I just said, Karen, I'm going to say right now, you know, this is what we're doing. We are excited about Ziggy. Well, I didn't know his name then, but we're so excited about this pregnancy. And I, at this point, said, and I do not want anyone from now on in to ask me or question this decision, to ask me about whether I want to have a termination, because obviously, as we know, you can legally terminate a child with Down syndrome right up until they're actually in the birth canal. And I said, and if anyone does, put it this way, they're going to be in serious trouble. And I said, if you want to write that in red ink on my notes, I don't care, but I want to enjoy my pregnancy. We are all in, we are excited, and never question my decision. And the relief for her was huge, and they loved it. And they embraced it, and they supported us brilliantly on the journey all the way through and since. So that was actually lovely. And I feel, and it's sad to say that I feel lucky to have had that experience, because it shouldn't be luck. Yeah. It should be that everyone has that experience and are supported in whatever decision they choose to make.
Yeah.
I felt really, you know, lucky that we just had such really caring individuals that were aware of how important language is, and how a journey like that is incredibly scary, no matter who you were. And as I say, it wasn't easy for us. I sat there and thought, can I do this? How are the disabilities going to be? Am I too old? You know, because I'm a sort of, oh, I'm going to say slightly older. I am an older mother. I mean, let's face it. I think I was 45 when I was pregnant with Ziggy. I'm going to be tired as it is as mum. How am I going to cope when Ziggy has sort of extra needs and things like that? So all sorts of things went through my head. And as you say, when it came to it, I just knew that there wasn't really a choice I could make, because the physical act for me, having lost so many children, was just actually not even possible. And then after that, we just embraced it. And I remember saying to Darren one morning, shall we tell Dorothy today that we're pregnant? I think we were about 20 weeks. And like you said, we had the heart scan. And that, for me, it was exactly the same. It was so reassuring. I was so worried about that for him. Is it over 50% of children with Down syndrome have some kind of heart
areas,
defect?
Isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. But actually, this is one of the questions I'd asked of the Down Syndrome Association. I think 80% of those are quite reasonably minor. So they may involve heart surgery still, which in itself sounds ridiculous to talk about that as minor, but they are either holes that close up or, you know, it's relatively easily fixed. I mean, for a parent, heart surgery is not a relatively easy concept to understand, but I think it's the larger proportion are sort of, you know, considered to be minor. But still, if someone talks to you about, well, your child could be born with a heart defect that requires surgery before they're one, I mean, it's terrifying, right? So
that's the thing, I think, because when you say yes, you have to say yes to it all, don't you? Like, you're saying yes to your child, and then just like any other child, you don't know what's going to come up. You just don't. And that was what someone said to me at the time, which was really reassuring in that sense, that it's just like any other child. Yes, we're more likely to have other things coming up, but so do lots of children, you know. And you go in and you have to just go, okay, I'm in. And then I think that's what was hard though as well, because things would just pop up, you know, in later pregnancy, in the early weeks, and your kind of stomach does a flip because you're like, which way is this going to go? You know, they see something small, or they were worried Jude would have a stomach issue, like towards the end of pregnancy in the scans. So we knew he had to have a tube down his throat, like just very quick in and out, just to check that if I fed him, the milk would reach his tummy or something. And you're just holding your breath, aren't you, for things like that? You're just like, please let it be okay. But you know, if it's not, you'll work around it and you'll deal with it. But you just keep wanting it to be okay. And I think I did hold my breath a lot that first year. Things kept coming up, you know, and you're like, oh, you know.
Yeah. I know what you mean. I think, as I say, the care was brilliant for us, and it was the scans as well, because we had more frequent scans, partly because, as I say, I was over 40, but also because of my previous, you know, history of loss and Ziggy's condition. But actually that worked out in my favour, because it meant I was quite reassured as we went along the journey. But actually that was the other sort of slightly, not downside, but our sonographer loved to tell us every time we went, she would say, you know, delivering bad news, and she would say, so yes, the baby is showing some markers of Down syndrome. And I was literally lying there. I was finding it quite funny, because I was, you do know we've had a amniocentesis and we do actually have a diagnosis. She was like, and it was almost as if she wasn't listening. She was sort of, yes, but so he has the no nasal bone, you know, which is a marker of Down syndrome, sort of, yeah. And then she said, and he has short femurs, which is, you know, it seems often the marker of Down syndrome. And I said, at this point, I just remember I was just so fed up with listening to this at every scan. And it was like she'd never met me before every time we went in. And I said, have you met my other half? And she said, no. And I thought, yes, you have, because actually you delivered the news about Beau. But anyway, she obviously didn't put all that together. Yeah. But and then she said, and I said, we'll put it this way. He's 5'6". I'm 5'2". Neither of us can reach the top shelf as it is. So pretty much height is not an issue for us either way. So unless you're telling us that having short femurs is a problem that we need to worry about and he's going to require surgery, then should we just let it go? And she looked at me and she was just, no, you don't understand. I was like, I'm going to stop you there. I said, I do understand, but at the end of the day, this isn't an issue. He's going to be short like his dad, like me. And there was a medical student in there as well, one of the and she was like literally like giggling away, laughing and getting it as a, I understand, you know, and this woman just wouldn't let it go. But it's one of those things where people, and you see this sometimes, and we all see it, right? It's those stereotypes. It's those things that people want to impart. It's that, I know someone with Down syndrome, and I know they're happy all the time. Or I know someone with Down syndrome, and oh my gosh, you know, aren't they lovely? All these people with Down syndrome, they've all got these short legs and they've all got these,
and
and you
it's
just
always
sit there
they,
going,
isn't it? It's always
oh.
them and they, and they're grouped. They're all just individual children and they share this extra chromosome, but it's so different, isn't it? Like there's such a massive spectrum. It's just, I feel like it's like with all children, there's just this huge spectrum of difference.
For sure.
And everyone sits somewhere on it and all have their own quirks and things.
Because we go to a group, don't we? Ziggy and Jude go to the same speech and language therapy group.
Yeah.
And if you think there are six children in that class, they've all have Down syndrome. And that's pretty much the only thing they have in common. They all look totally different. They're all different physiques. They're all different personalities. You know, they're all demanding different things at different times for different reasons. They're all at very different stages in their development, their learning or physicality, whatever it is. And they're all unique and they're all different.
Yeah.
And yeah, it only takes meeting one child with Down syndrome, say, to sort of realize that. And that's why, you know, as you know, we do some advocacy on Instagram with Ziggy. He's got his own account, and I'm quite happy. I do feel a bit uncomfortable about it sometimes, but I share sort of that stuff as well as the other stuff. Like I put up a post recently of Ziggy, you know, and he was literally almost just complaining and not crying. And it was like, he's not happy all the time. You know, it's no stereotype. He really isn't. He's like any child. He has that range of emotions,
totally.
From anger to happiness to frustration, and probably a bit more so because obviously speech is taking longer to come. So he can get more frustrated because he can't communicate. So
have you seen that new brilliant like ad going around for World Down Syndrome Day and the don't assume? And it's like, you assume I can't drink a margarita, so you don't give me the margarita. So I don't drink
yeah.
margarita.
So yes, I saw that campaign, the Assume I Can video,
yeah.
and it was just incredible. And those ideas of going, if you just start from a focal point of going, well, you can't do this, you're going to be like this, an extra, you've got Down syndrome, therefore it means you're happy all the time, or you'll just be, you know, sitting there on your own and not being able to do anything. You can't work, you can't have sex, you know, you can't be in relationships, you can't drink. Then that's how society is going to continue to see you.
Yeah.
Whereas actually, if you start from the point as you do with any child of your potential is limitless within your own boundaries, because we all have boundaries, don't we, I guess, to a certain extent, then let everyone just find that potential and have a go at doing whatever they feel they can. And we're seeing so many amazing advocates at the moment, you know, Down syndrome, different disabilities, who are achieving that potential in the public eye and showing people, assume I can, don't assume I can't, let me show you.
Yeah.
And we'll start from an even playing field. And I think it's so important, you know, and for our children of our generation, Jude and Ziggy, I do feel that's one thing for me. I do feel lucky or blessed that we're sort of starting on this journey in this generation,
yeah,
and that there are people
definitely.
That have gone before us, like Nicola Enoch, who's set up Positive About Down Syndrome, and, you know, that have worked so hard to campaign and change laws and change perceptions. You know,
oh,
we're
she's
coming
done
off the
amazing,
back of that.
Hasn't she?
But yeah.
What she's done with Positive About Down Syndrome and the Great Expectations group, when you're pregnant and you find this charity and you go into this like pregnancy Facebook group, it's an absolute lifesaver, I think. And all the groups we're in now are in like the preschool group now, aren't we? But and I know she does way more than that. But from my point of view, how I've accessed it has been those little community groups. And they've been so amazing, like really amazing, really amazing.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I discovered that quite early on. And I think the difference with anything else that's out there that helps you is that these are real people living life with Down syndrome.
Yeah.
And that's the key. They are real. And it doesn't take long when you're in that group to know, to see the fact that the extra chromosome doesn't really matter. You know, children, as you said, sort of develop in different ways, no matter whether they've got an extra chromosome or not. You know, you could end up with all sorts of issues, extra chromosome or not. So you learn to sort of go, do you know what? This is this amazingly strong community of people who just want to do their best for their children and to almost not be left alone to do it, but to sort of have the luxury of bringing up their children without initial prejudice and, you know, with inclusion and with understanding, the same way as we offer to, I mean, like you, I've got another child, and, you know, I would expect Ziggy to be offered the same inclusion, the same understanding as Dorothy, in whatever, you know, faces her in life. And that's the great thing about the group, is that you find a like-minded group of people where it's an open forum. Nothing's barred. You can talk about some of the really difficult things. You can talk about challenges. You can talk about what's scaring you, and also celebrate the things that are amazing about our kids.
And there's a lot of honesty, isn't there, in those groups?
There is.
Like, people do talk about the things that are hard and that are scary, because, of course, you know, I can flip in and out of things, you know, all the time now. You know, I can just have a day where I get stuck in my head and, you know, the worry train starts and I just slip all over the place. And I'm like, hang on a minute. Like, you
slow
have to
down.
Check yourself, don't you? You're like, you know, you really have to check yourself and be like, you're not there, you know, be where you are. You have to, I think Jude helps me be very present. I have to keep coming back to now. You can escalate yourself, can't you? But again, you could do that with any kid. That's the thing. I think
for sure.
The way it's portrayed, when you find out, it is portrayed as a negative, obviously, isn't it? That's, you know, I mean, I feel I was quite lucky too with how it was said to me in most ways. But I think there's just this weight, this huge weight to it, which, you know, when you have a child with Down syndrome, you realize that really doesn't need to be there. You know, and I think that's what is amazing about these charities that are helping break that stigma, because it's so important to be broken.
Yeah.
And the boys are amazing, aren't they? Like, truly. They're just
And they are. And it's not even because they've got, you know, you also hear that one, the stereotype, it's because they've got the extra chromosome. That's that little bit of extra magic. And it's nothing to do with it. I sort of, I've found myself turning, I mean, of course there's something in that extra chromosome, but in the same way as the other 46 chromosomes make up Ziggy, right? You know, all of them make up Ziggy along with his father and me. So I've found myself, you know, because I can be a bit cheeky or belligerent when people have said, oh, you know, well, if you've got Down syndrome, then you're extra special and all of this. And I sort of say, well, I like to think it's because of me. And I've had people sort of look at me and I'm like, I'm just a brilliant mum. You
know? I love that.
You know, obviously I don't necessarily believe that I'm the same as any old mum. It's not because, but it's just the idea of you call them out in that way of making you think and go, do you really think it's just because of that, you know? But even I have found myself, even when I was in a situation where Ziggy was literally in the pram and he was moaning and complaining and crying about, so I can't remember what it was. And this person, this stranger on the bus, just went, oh, he's so cute. Oh, they're just happy all the time, aren't they? And I was actually sort of sitting there going, are you actually looking at the same child? You know, because my child at the moment is really complaining and crying, and all she could see was Down syndrome and those preconceptions of what she thought.
I've stopped seeing it. I don't know if I ever really saw it, but it's like I see it less and less, and someone will come up to me in the park and say something like, oh, you know, like it happens all the time. Someone will come up and say, like, connect with a story like, oh, my niece has got Down syndrome, or, you know, I actually work in speech language and I work with a lot of children with Down syndrome. And I'm, who are you talking about? You know, I sort of, how do you know?
Also, you go, and I'm not sure why this is relevant
to
this.
Why are you telling me that?
We're actually in the park just playing. I'm not sure why we're talking about speech and language therapy. We're in the park, right? You know, I mean, what triggered that?
You know, like that film Shallow Hal. I always think about that film because I'm like, Gwyneth Paltrow, he falls in love with her and he sees her like her soul.
Yeah.
And she's, you know, she looks like Gwyneth Paltrow, and in reality, she doesn't look like Gwyneth Paltrow. But I think about that because I don't know, not that Down syndrome isn't beautiful, it is anyway, but I just don't see it. And then I am taken aback myself.
Yeah.
That brings it to my attention. I'm like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Like, oh, we're talking about that, are we? I thought we were just making friends in the park.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing, you don't need to attach it to everything, do you?
Yeah.
You don't. It doesn't have to always be there, be present. I think when you get the diagnosis, it's all you can see, right? In your head, like it's the number one in bold letters. And then when they're here, I said this in the other podcast, but I was like, it's like 10th on the list. It's like, oh, dude, he's my son. He's a brother. He's super cute. I love his hair. He loves animals, you know, and it goes down and down. And then it's like, oh, yeah, and he has Down syndrome. But it's not blazing, you know, is it? It's not the be all and end all of his, who he is. And that's the thing. He's not Down syndrome. He has it, but he's not it. And I remember someone or reading it or someone saying that to me in one of the groups. And then I didn't quite get that. But soon, you know, once I had him, I was like, oh, yeah, it's like anything else someone could have. It's,
And then I find it, you know, I think about this type of stuff a lot because I sort of like to think I'm quite an understanding person. And, you know, I've got friends with all sorts of, you know, disabilities and conditions and things that have happened in life, et cetera, et cetera. But when I came to have a child with Down syndrome and additional needs, all of a sudden I'm like, well, we talk like this and this is, you know, what we think and this is what you should think, say to wider public. But then I'm like, I do question myself and say, did I think like that? Even someone who feels quite open and understanding and, you know, up with everything and what we should and shouldn't be doing. But I'm like, did I feel that I really understood the difference in some of the language that we encourage people to use? And would I ever have said they? And I really did question myself. And so that's why, you know, when I do meet people and say, particularly when people sort of seem really open and come up and say stuff like you've mentioned about, oh, I know somebody. Initially, I'm a bit, well, what relevant? I think initially I was a bit, well, that's not relevant to me. You know, you happen to know someone, but that doesn't mean they're the same as my child. It depends where they go with it. But now I sort of understand that actually it is quite a positive thing because people to actually actively engage with the idea of going, I'm here for you. I acknowledge it. And not that you should have to do that. We don't do that with other things. But actually for society to change, you almost need more people to be speaking out and going, I'm going to talk to you and I don't really know how to deal with this, but I just want to say something. And I want you to see that I am positive about Down syndrome, but my way might feel not right, but I'm just trying to get into it and under the skin of it and to really just go, I see this as a good thing. And I know people don't have to say that. We don't look for acceptance. You know, no one should be looking for people to tell you it's a good thing, but, and so sometimes it can come across in a slightly unusual way, but I sort of allow that leeway. I mean, sometimes it still ends up in stereotypes and people just wanting to tell you something that's not relevant and, you know, ends up in stuff that is sometimes a bit uncomfortable. But most of the time I've had just such positive experiences with people just wanting to support, and with World Down Syndrome Day coming up and my daughter's school is supporting, you know, and doing so much stuff. And Ziggy doesn't even go there, you know, and the same with his nursery. And she's doing a bake sale and sold over 100 cakes. And people are just there and want to understand and know and to say, yeah, we see it's inclusion, it's diversity, and we're part of that, right? So I feel very positive about our experience and our community around that. Yeah. But it does feel like a fight sometimes in other aspects. As you know, we as parents, particularly in some of the medical areas and the sort of support areas, are fighting, and we have to fight hard. I have to say what I've realized, that the benefit of having a diagnosis of Down syndrome is that at least there's something there on paper and we're not having to prove that our children potentially are going to have developmental delays or physical, you know, developmental delays, you know, speech and language, whatever. So that bit's okay, but the difficulty then is accessing the services. And it's such a postcode lottery, as you know, I think we've all talked about at various points.
And with the medical side, right, because obviously Jude's been in hospital recently, it was just a fight. And I would say things because I know him, you know, and I'm offended when they question that. The SATs machine for the oxygen, it clearly wasn't working because he was dropping, it was saying he was in the 80s, but I could tell he wasn't at that point. He had been, but I could tell he wasn't at that point. And I said to the nurse, I said, look, he's showing 80, he's not 80. And she was like, how do you know? It's like, I'm his
Because,
mum. Like,
yeah.
I'm his mum. I'm with him all the time. I've watched this machine for days. Like, he's not in the 80s. And I was like, it's definitely the probe. We need to change it because obviously you're reading this. This is how we get out of here. Like, if he's not in the 90s, we're not going home. And then we changed the probe and it flicked up into the 90s. And she was like, oh, interesting. Listen to us. Because also, I think what one of the things that is actually I find really tricky is that when he's ill, he doesn't show it as much as my other two. Like, I feel like Jude's quite internal, you know, and it's like his outward expression isn't as strong. So when he's ill, he can seem kind of fine and actually be really quite poorly. And that's tricky. But you know, you get those signs, don't you? And then you go into A&E and they're like, no, well, he looks fine. And you're like, no, he's not. And then they do the bloods or whatever, and they're like, whoa.
Yeah, quickly.
Like, press
I
a
know.
button.
Where we've had this benefit of those that have gone before us, and we've all, I think, got on our phone that fact
That
sheet that
triage
says
sheet.
basically you need to listen to the mom. Did they have a temperature? Are they eating? It's all of the things that I remember with Dorothy. If I ever considered going to A&E, children with Down syndrome, firstly, they may not even get a temperature. I don't think I've ever really known or found out why that's the case. And secondly, it just they present in different ways. And Ziggy's the same as Jude. He'll get, you're sort of sitting there watching him going, well, I know you must have an awful cold because you have snot coming from everywhere, and but you seem to be bouncing around. And then in 2 minutes' time, he'll have croup, I mean,
Yeah,
that's the thing.
I
It's
know.
quite terrifying, in those early years when they're sort of developing the respiratory system and stuff. We're seeing it a lot with a lot of typical families as well in our, in our networks, to be honest with you. But there is a law that came in, I think it's April actually. It's named after a little girl who sadly died, where the mum was in hospital saying, I know my child, I know something is wrong, and you need to listen to me. And she wasn't listened to, and sadly the child died. And actually, if they had listened to her, then she was indicating something that might have helped her if they'd responded to that. That now there is a law that's coming in from April whereby practitioners have to take into account the knowledge and what the parent is saying in those situations. So it is a thing, as opposed to just going, we know best, and we've done all of our tick boxes and therefore they're fine. And it's, but then, like you said, in your situation with Jude, he obviously wasn't, right? His sats aren't right. He's, it's a
I
difficult
know. I
one, but.
just can't believe that they do discount a mother or a father's opinion in that situation. I mean, they're basically an extension of us, aren't they? In
Well,
the
yeah.
early years, we're like so connected and we live and breathe them. And then they're
Yeah.
like, you don't know what you're talking about. You're like,
Think I do.
yeah, that's a whole other
Yeah, that maybe is another podcast,
podcast.
but I mean, and that is obviously not discounting the amazing work that the NHS does,
Yeah,
et
of
cetera, et cetera.
course.
But yeah, I mean, I just, for me, having Ziggy, I mean, he is 3 years old. He's just turned three. And okay, he can walk, but he looks like a little drunk man most of the time, tumbles a lot, falls into things, potential for being a fleer, no danger awareness, no self-control in his walking, would just walk across roads and all of that.
Oh yeah, Jude
So,
likes to do that.
yeah, physically, in that sense, it's interesting. You have this sort of baby almost for a lot longer, don't you? Which, if you embrace it, and it's difficult to do sometimes, it's gorgeous. And you have to let go. And I say this not making it sound easy of the milestones, the comparisons, the, and maybe it's been easier because Ziggy isn't our first child, so I'm not in that first, we're not in NCT groups, we're not got this direct comparison group that's right there and they're all progressing off. And I just don't care. I know well enough second time around to know that, gosh, there is no comparison. There's no point comparing because Ziggy, I can't force Ziggy to do anything quicker than he's doing it now. You do occasionally, well, I do, even with Ziggy, who's, progressing quite well in his things. And you always sit there and sort of think, well, he's saying a few words now, but will he talk properly? You know, will he talk?
I think
And
there's just
wondering
more
what's to
question
come.
marks, isn't there? There's definitely more question marks. I think with typical children, you just assume it's coming, don't you? You just do. You don't even think that those milestones aren't going to be hit. But with our kids, you just don't know sometimes it might not happen. But I think in so many kids, it does. It just comes, sometimes much later, but it comes, doesn't it? And it's a real lesson in just seeing the child in front of you and just being really with them. I mean, Jude doesn't have any words really. He's just started kind of, he sort of says half a ball. He sort of goes, ooh, and finds it. And we've got loads of animal sounds, but no, not really any words. My daughter, who's my middle one, and she obviously girls do tend to kind of talk faster anyway. But she was, she, I remember her saying mummy before she was one. And it's so different, but then it's like, does it matter? Not really. It's like
No.
he loves, he just loves to dance, and so we do a lot of dancing.
Takes after his mum, does he, Jen?
Yeah, I think so. There's been a lot of kitchen disco, but yeah, the little tiny dancer.
I know it is. It's this real sobering moment, isn't it? Of you just slow down. And I am one of those people who, with my first child, was always, and I enjoyed it, one thing to the next. And it was going out and meeting friends and X, Y, and Z. And actually, if someone said, just be at home and just play with your child at home, I can't sit still, basically. That's just me. But with Ziggy's really taught me how to slow down and just to potter around and to be with him and to savor these beautiful moments of just development that are harder to come by, I guess, than with a typical child. So you, I just feel so lucky to be sitting there and watching in slow motion, almost to a certain extent, this little boy just finding his way, but loving life. That's the thing. I think we go back to that society idea of society almost pitying maybe families with Down, children with Down syndrome, or feeling sorry for you, or whatever it is. Whereas actually, Ziggy isn't unhappy with his life. He adores his life. He doesn't know any different. He's loving everything he does. So what is there to pity? What is there to feel sorry for? What does he care if he can't ride a bike yet at 3 years old? Doesn't mean anything to him. So why should it bother me? And that's where I decided to plant my feet with it all and just where I could let go of that comparison of to typical 3-year-olds. Because as you said earlier, everyone is different. What is a typical person? But you know, it is that thing, isn't it? Like you said, you give birth to a child, just gotta let it go.
Yeah, totally. I feel like that's a really nice point to kind of maybe finish, because I just feel like we've sort of gone on a bit of a journey, and I love the way we've ended that about how gorgeous our boys are.
Gorgeous.
And I love where we've taken it, because I think I was thinking more about a bit of a timeline, but I love that we've really explored Down syndrome actually, and what it means to us. And it's just, I just love talking about it. But I have to say, it's taken me time to get here. Do you know what I mean? I'm one of those people that, sometimes, like, some people are amazing and they find out, when they're pregnant, or maybe they've just had their baby and they found out, and they straight away embrace it, and they're in everything and they're shouting from the rooftops. And I think, God, you're amazing. It takes me time. And like lately, I've wanted to watch so many programs with people with Down syndrome. And like, I've been watching Down with Love, and I watched the New Model Agency, and there was something else. And I'm just like, I can't get enough of seeing what he might be like when he's older. Whereas a year ago, I couldn't have actually watched that. I wasn't there. I have to kind of take myself there slowly and gently. So it's definitely a journey. And I think, it's, and again, it's individual, isn't it? It's an individual journey for the parents and the siblings and for the child, just like any child.
Even if we might all be comfortable with it now, there's always that period, or there seems to more than often be this sort of sense of doubt.
We battle a lot with expectation, right? You get pregnant, you already have an expectation, really, don't you? who they're going to be, what you're thinking it's going to be like, what the journey kind of looks like in the future. And when you get, I think, a diagnosis, that just everything stops. And I remember those in-between weeks, like 12 to 20, I remember feeling like I was literally upside down. I couldn't land, couldn't ground. I was all over the place. And that was more because there was going to be this huge shift, right, in thinking and heart and everything, like in the best possible way, I think, because, you know, you grow so much as a person.
Yeah.
It's such a gift, like really, this kind of journey. Like I feel lucky. I think it's quite spiritual going on a journey like this and changing everything you can ever think that your life was going to be, and you change it.
Do you feel the same? I feel like Ziggy, I hear people say it, and sometimes I just say, oh God, I sound like such an idiot. But he has changed me. I mean, I feel like, because of having worked in charities and worked a lot with in the area of children with disabilities and stuff, I sort of come from a reasonably good place. But also for me, that, I don't know, slowing down and just being able to enjoy Ziggy, and it doesn't matter where he is. I just really don't care. And sometimes I feel a bit, yeah, but how would you feel, Susie, if I try and sort of go, how would you feel if he, I don't know, we had a slow feeding journey, for example, but he is eating really well now. But how would I feel if he was still tube fed? Would I be feeling as positive? How far would you go? So I'm realistic at going, we have been very lucky in our diagnosis. We didn't have any, I mean, we've had our own things, don't get me wrong, but we've gone through those.
Yeah.
And now we're coming out the other side. So, you know, we're not looking at heart surgery. We're not, he's eating well now. You know, we've just had the sleep apnea sort of surgery and things like that. So we're ticking off boxes. Yes, of course, it's still relevant because he's three and we're still getting through those things. But compared to some others, I don't want to ever seem like I'm just like, oh, yeah, it's really easy. And you just accept it. And you
I
get
know
on
exactly what you mean. I feel the same, you know, with Jude. He hasn't had, touch wood, always, many other health conditions, which, you know, children with Down syndrome, that's something that they do face. Some children get everything, don't they? Which, you know, they might have, I mean, I think the four areas, aren't they? Heart, bowels, ears and eyes are the four main ones. And some children have all of those affected, which it must be way harder. And I think I do feel lucky in that he hasn't had those issues so far. But, you know, again, that's our journey, isn't it? It's just, it's different. Yeah, it's definitely not easy. I've just loved having a good old chat with you as well.
Yeah. Let's do it another time, but without a podcast.
And a glass of wine. But just to say thank you so much, Susie. It's been a total pleasure to talk to you today about our lovely boys in honour of World Down Syndrome Day. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. It's been a pleasure. Here's to Ziggy and Jude.
Oh, thank you. Bye.
Bye.